The goal is not to avoid marriage or be afraid of marriage or to be afraid of being in a relationship, but the goal is to try to find the right relationship by entering into it for the right reasons and entering into it in a healthy place, knowing what you want.
This is episode number 582 with Sarah Intelligator. We are going to be talking about avoiding divorce from a divorce attorney's perspective. This is a really important conversation. Hi, everybody. I am Sandy Weiner, and I want to welcome you back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you on your journey to lasting love, I've written two books. The first one is called Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. And this book is really about core confidence. It's about how to really build your own sense of self so that you make good choices in life and that you're able to really stand up for the things that matter to you. And the second book is Choice Points in Dating. And this book, I wrote this because I just saw too many people making terrible choices. And I think we're going to be talking about that today. Both books are available on Amazon for paperback and Kindle. And every week I share a tip on how to become a woman of value. And this week's tip is your past doesn't limit you. And again, this really dovetails nicely into today's episode, because I think a lot of people who have been divorced or have had really hard relationship issues think that this is it, you know, this whatever happened in the past is going to happen again. And you see this with people who have been cheated on and they have trust issues, and they think that because I came from a family that was dysfunctional or my parents were divorced, so it's just a legacy that I'm going to keep repeating and my children will repeat. And I want to have you remember that that is not true, that with the proper inner work, you can really create a new legacy for yourself. And if you are married, if you had been married with children, that your children can actually go on to live a very different life than you might have had in your past. Before I bring Sarah on, I just want to give a shout out to my Facebook group. It's called Your Last First Date. And we are a group for women over 40 who are looking for a positive place of support, a rarity in the world of dating groups online. I have been a member of many, and they end up just being a place to say how bad dating is and how horrible men are. Just so much negativity and so many limiting beliefs. And we are here to set you straight and to give you positive support so that you learn to show up differently in your dating life. So if you are not yet a member, come and join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest, Sarah Intelligator. She is a divorce attorney in LA. She practices family law since 2008, and she's also been a yoga instructor since 2000. She bridged both of her worlds, coining the term holistic divorce and family law. And that inspired her to write her first book, Live, Laugh, True Love, a step-by-step guide to dating and finding a meaningful relationship from a divorce attorney. In Sarah's spare time, she enjoys traveling and spending time with her son, Eli, and her husband, Joel. She also dabbles in interior design. Yes, I read that you designed your husband's office, his pediatric office, and yes. People are like, whoa, so cool. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited about this conversation. I mean, I think if everybody could have the how-to manual on how to not get divorced and how to have a more successful marriage, we'd have so many fewer divorces and happier relationships. And we don't usually hear about that from a divorce attorney. So tell us a little bit about your journey from divorce attorney to being kind of a relationship expert in a way.
Well, I went through my own divorce back in the day. I was very young, and I was already practicing family law at the time, but that very much informed my style of practice and the way that I viewed my clients and their situations. And then, you know, just having practiced for as many years as I have, I started to really see these discernible and unmistakable patterns over and over and over again. Every relationship is unique. Everybody is different, but the patterns are so redundant that I could almost predict when I see a relationship, whether it will fail and why it will fail. And that just has come, you know, in my experience in watching relationships fail and people coming to my office for the same reasons. And I felt that having gone through my own divorce and watching so many people, you know, squander their children's college funds, squander their life savings, even if it's not a contentious or expensive divorce, just go through the complete emotional devastation that accompanies divorce. And I thought, if I could prevent people from doing this, I want to get to them before they come to my office. I don't really have access to people before they get to my office, right? So this was my way of accessing people before they got there and saying, don't come here.
Having gone through a divorce myself, it's a horrible experience. No matter how amicable it is, no matter what it costs, it takes its toll. And both financially, emotionally, on the children, on you, on your finances, everything. And people don't realize that. I think there's something in your book about if people realized what a divorce would entail, they would not have gotten married in the first place. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I think that a lot of people who have been through a divorce are apprehensive about remarriage, or, you know, people say that to me all the time, like, oh, I'm never getting married again. And I think that, you know, why deprive yourself of a really meaningful relationship just because you've made some mistakes that if you probably went back in time and scrutinized, you would probably realize what went wrong and why you made those choices, and then what you can do differently the next time. The goal is not to avoid marriage or be afraid of marriage or to be afraid of being in a relationship, but the goal is to try to find the right relationship by entering into it for the right reasons and entering into it in a healthy place, knowing what you want.
And you talked a little bit about why your first marriage failed. Can you talk a little bit about that for our audience?
Yeah. So I met my ex-husband when I was 17. He was 19 at the time. And I went to an all-girls school. And so a boy paying attention to me was like the coolest thing in the world. And he was very sweet. He is a sweet person. He's a very good person. And that won me over. It didn't have anything to do with the fact that you know, we had very different backgrounds, that now in hindsight, and then also in my work with people, I can see it's a recipe for disaster. In other words, there was no, commonality necessarily in our fundamental values. And, you know, there were other things at play, like some of the issues that I had growing up, and where I was in my life and having not recognized that those issues were causing me to have lower self-esteem. And so anyone who paid attention to me was just like, this is it. I have to marry you because, you know, we have so much in common because you like me and you think I'm awesome, which is not the criteria for a good marriage. Yeah. And so we were together for 10 years. I thought we were two peas in a pod just because we had a lot of superficial interests and we kind of grew up together and cultivated those superficial interests together, but they weren't things that were sustainable over the course of a lifetime. And I think that, you know, and I try to say this without sounding conceited because I truly don't mean it in that sort of way, but we were just at very different levels in our lives and what we expected of our lives. And, you know, I was a lot more tenacious and goal-oriented, and that's just how I was raised. And so without me even knowing that about him, he had spent 10 years feeling like he had to keep up with me and what my expectations were. And it's nothing I imposed upon him. It's just, that's how he felt. That was the only way he was going to keep me. And so he became resentful. And so often I see relationships fail because, you know, there's a power inequity, or people are at just different levels and one partner is always trying to keep up with the other or please the other. Well, that gets exhausting. That's not sustainable. And so when he came to that realization and that resentment just started to boil over, that was the demise of the relationship. And I, you know, he didn't even recognize it necessarily. It was something that I kind of pointed out, like, I feel like, you know, maybe you're not interested in me or you're withdrawing or whatever it was, but those were just outward manifestations of what he was experiencing on the inside. So, you know, we felt it was best to part ways at that point. And, it was, you know, difficult obviously in that moment because I was 27 and I met him when I was 17, and that was the only serious relationship I had ever been in. And so it was really all I had ever known. And there was a lot of fear associated with finding another relationship, ever finding someone else who I felt like I connected with on that level. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. I'm remarried now. So that was ancient history.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a bunch of things that actually I wanted to talk about, which are the F words, the reasons that a lot of relationships fail. And before I get to that, I want to say that a lot of the things you mentioned are just so common. And I was just talking to a woman who's in her late 20s. She has a history of dating men who don't treat her well. And she went on a date with a guy who opened the door and paid for everything. And she's like, he's so sweet and he's so kind. I said, that is like the bare minimum. Your bar is so low because you have tolerated such bad behavior that you think this guy is amazing because he treated you respectfully and kindly. And I want you to have higher standards for yourself. But we don't see that a lot of times. We don't really see, like, what are the fundamental things that we do have to have in common? So you mentioned a few of them, actually. You mentioned fundamental values and you mentioned fear as two of the F words. So if you could go through the six F words briefly, that would be great.
Sure. So the F words are, I kind of distilled from watching all of these relationships fail for the same reasons over and over again. I distilled these unmistakable patterns that I see across the board. And I coined the term the fail factors, which I shortened into the F words, and there are six of them. And these are the reasons that most relationships fail. So the number one is fundamental values. Now, most of these are in no particular order, but I put fundamental values first because I do believe that this actually, without shared fundamental values, the relationship will fail. There is no moving forward from that. Fundamental values refers to not just things that you're superficially interested in right now at this moment in your life, but things that kind of define you. They define who you are. They're things that you valued your entire life. They've been important to you your entire life, and they're going to continue to be well into your, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s for the entirety of your life. They're not fleeting interests. They're true core values. And so the goal is to define your own fundamental values so that you can ascertain whether your partner shares those fundamental values. And to try to find a partner who shares as many of those fundamental values with you as possible. And then the rest of them are in no particular order. So foundation is another one. The relationship has to have a solid foundation. I analogize this to building a house. You don't need to know anything about construction to know that if your house is not built on a solid foundation, all the support beams will topple and the house will topple over and it'll fall, right? And so when I refer to foundation, I'm talking about things like, do you have trust in your relationship? Is there honesty? These similar concepts, but different. How do you communicate? Do you respect one another? Do you work together well as a team? Is that something that you're able to do? And so building the solid foundation together is really critical for the longevity of a relationship. The next F word is fear, which I touched upon a little bit, but so many relationships, I would say most relationships fail out of fear. People are afraid that if they leave the relationship, they might not find someone better. They're afraid they might not find someone else, or all their friends are getting married and I'm going to be the last man standing, or I'm you know, going to be left out. I'm going to be the third wheel on all the dates. Whatever the fear is, fear gets in our heads and it keeps us in relationships we shouldn't stay in. And it makes us choose relationships we shouldn't actually choose in the first place. And so we have to really rely not on fear, but on our intelligence, our innate inner voice. I liken it to kind of Jiminy Cricket in Pinocchio. It's like, if Pinocchio listened to Jiminy Cricket, he wouldn't have ended up locked up in a cage by Stromboli, right? We ignore that inner voice because it's easier not to, because if we have to actually listen to that inner voice, then we have to do the thing we don't want to do, which is uncomfortable, which is scary, and maybe leave the relationship. And so it's easier to just ignore it and you know, tell our intuition to be quiet than it is to follow it. Family is another F word. Family refers not only to, you know, your actual nuclear family, but it could mean anyone who is a family figure. Does your partner have a relationship with his or her family? Does he or she not have a relationship with his or her family? What role will the family play in your relationship? Do you get along with the family? Do you not get along with the family? Is your partner's family very critical of you? Families get involved and they can destroy relationships, especially if your partner's close to the family and the family doesn't like you or you don't like the family. And so too, I think knowing if your partner is not close with his or her family, why is that? What are those? Because those are likely some issues that are going to come up in the relationship if they haven't necessarily been addressed, or even if they have been by your partner. Those are important issues. Our families shape us for better or for worse. So the next one is fairy tale. Fairy tale is this idea that we romanticize the notion of marriage and we get married for the sake of getting married. That is the end goal. Instead of getting married because we found the right partner and we want to spend our lives with this person, we get married because we want to have the wedding. We want to have the storybook proposal. We want to, you know, post all about it on our social media accounts. That is a recipe for disaster, for failure, because there is nothing there holding the relationship together. There's no substance. It's about a goal that is completely irrelevant to the success of a relationship. And then the last F word is fixing. And fixing is a two-parter. Fixing means you don't go into a relationship trying to fix your partner or change your partner. If your partner, you know, we all evolve, obviously we grow, but your partner's not a project, right? Your partner should be complete and wonderful just the way he or she is. You are not going to change him or her or fix him or her. The other aspect of fixing is yourself. Maybe you have some issues that you haven't addressed going into the relationship. And it's not to say that we don't all have our issues. I mean, we're all so unique and interesting and beautiful because of the pains that we've had in our lives and the traumas and all of these things. But we want to make sure that we aren't playing those issues out in the relationship and that we're not picking a partner because of those issues. And so we want to make sure that we enter into the relationship in a healthy way so that we can select a healthy relationship. And so those are the F words in a nutshell, essentially.
It's so much to cover here. Yeah. I have so many thoughts. So they're great because I could resonate. I mean, they resonated with me on so many levels for why my relationship with my husband failed. But the family in particular was one that I came in thinking one thing, and one little red flag happened before we got married. But for the most part, I saw an intact family, parents who were still married, who said, "I love you," which I didn't grow up with the "I love you." My parents were divorced. Mm-hmm. And I was yearning for a family that would be loving and accepting. And his father was very, very accepting of me, but actually not of his son. And his mother was accepting of his son and not me in the end. You know, that's kind of how it panned out. And anything that went wrong, she would pull him closer and push me away. And That kind of taking sides is so toxic. And as a mother-in-law now, I told them from the beginning, I'm never taking sides. I love you, but you get to work things out between the two of you. That's your domain. You are a family now. And it's just so, so toxic for people to come in and start to put a wedge in between the couple. Yeah. Because it can absolutely destroy. And when your spouse doesn't stick up for you, and that was also an issue. And I see that a lot where they're torn. And I see that even post divorce, I see people dating and not being able to choose between their children's needs and their partner's needs. And you have to prioritize, you have to be able to set boundaries, and people are terrible at boundaries. So many of these things, the fixing, coming in, expecting, hoping somebody will change. You know, there's that old saying that men hope women never change, and men and women hope men will change. It's like this.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. It's like women come in to marriage hoping the men will change, yeah. and the men hope the woman never will change. And there lies the issue.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer.
I think what happens a lot is people come in thinking they share values. They think they share a foundation. They have similar goals. They both want the same things, but it doesn't play out that way because they don't see what's beneath the surface.
Correct.
And I think, you know, you talked a little bit about that in your first marriage. I think because your ex-husband was in college, he was going for a degree, but he didn't really care about his education the way you cared about education. And I think a lot of times we go in thinking we share all these same things, and really our motivation is completely different. So do you have any ways that people can find out what's under the surface before they get married? Because sometimes it doesn't come up until you're really living with each other.
Yeah. So this is something I talk about with respect to fundamental values in my book. We don't have the time here to get into it, but I kind of try to guide people into how to define their fundamental values. But I talk about conducting the job interview. So once you've defined your fundamental values, your next step is to come up with some questions. And these are just, you know, you don't have to have them memorized, or you don't have to have a list going into your date. But I call it the job interview, because I think dating is very much like a job interview. Does this candidate get the most important position at the end of the day, which is your spouse? And so, you know, I think it's a good idea, once you've defined your fundamental values, to come up with a couple of questions that you could ask. You kind of have them in the back of your mind on a date. It don't have to be all at once. It could be on a first date, could sprinkle in a couple into the second date, you know, sprinkle more organically. I don't think dates should be devoid of flirtation, but I do think that there should be some questions in the back of your mind geared toward ascertaining whether this person shares your fundamental values or not. And underlying that, obviously, is an acknowledgement of what your own fundamental values are, of course. So coming up with some questions, conducting the job interview, when your date speaks, when this person answers your questions, do you listen to what he or she is saying? So many people hear what they want to hear and not what they're being told, where they say, oh, well, yeah, he doesn't actually mean that. He means this. No, he means what he's saying, right? Like, listen to what he's saying, because if you don't like that answer, again, that's fear creeping in. You want to justify the answer you're getting so that you don't have to end this relationship because you think this person is so attractive or so fun or so cool, whatever it is. Listen to the answer. If it's not the right answer, it's a lot easier to end it now before you're emotionally attached than once you are.
So can you give an example of a fundamental value and the question that people might ask?
Yeah. So One fundamental value that is, I think, really obvious is religion. If somebody is a devout Catholic, this is very important to them. They were raised Catholic. They go to church every Sunday. They celebrate all of the holidays. They want to raise their children Catholic. They want to observe Catholicism for the rest of their lives. Then somebody who is either an atheist or agnostic, or maybe of a different faith, might not be the right person for this devout Catholic. And it's not a judgment on anybody. Everyone's entitled to their own fundamental values. We just want to make sure that the person that we're going to potentially be raising our children with or living our lives together with, that we live those lives in the same sort of way. So one question that you could ask is, you can make a joke about it. You can say something like, someone will, I talk about this in my book, but, somebody might say something about, oh, I feel so guilty. And you can say, oh, well, I was raised Catholic. I know all about guilt, or, something like that. It doesn't have to be serious. Like, what is your religion? What do you believe in? Or you can say something like, oh, well, I can't do anything this Sunday. Like, what are your plans for the weekend? Well, I can't do anything on Sunday because I go to church on Sunday mornings. And I do that every Sunday, but I would be happy to do it on a Saturday and see how the person reacts. Right? You're giving a little clue to elicit a reaction and to gauge that reaction, because sometimes it's not going to be a straightforward answer, right? We're all familiar with body language, how people look when they're sad or dejected, right? They kind of look down. When people are really excited, they might make eye contact or open their eyes really widely, right? So it might be about body language just as much as about what is said, but you're there to take it all in and really scrutinize everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good, because I think if you just hammer somebody with questions, it doesn't go well.
Yeah.
Even though I agree with you, it is a job interview. I tell women that they're the CEO of their love life and they're there to hire and fire people. Like that is their job.
I
think so many of them just think, oh, pick me. I hope I get hired. That's not the way it works. It's like, it's a two-way street here. And you have to make sure this person is a good fit. I will tell you that in my life, also with religion, we both observed the same religion and wanted to raise our kids the same in the same religion and send them to private schools and all this. But the way he observed the religion and the way he saw God was completely different from me.
Yeah.
And I saw that right away. I didn't respect it. And that really was an issue. So this lack of respect for how somebody lives their lives is a real problem.
Well, and that's one of the components of a solid foundation. And I've had that issue come up where, I represented somebody who was an Orthodox Jew, and he married someone who was Jewish, but not Orthodox. And he wanted to raise the child Orthodox and she did not. And even within the same faith, there was a dissonance, because that is something that is pretty fundamental.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And even, we're going through right now when we're recording, there's a war going on in Israel, and how people see that, how people, are they anti all the enemy? Are they talking about it in a certain way? It really does color a relationship, and these things are important. Then I call these worldview kinds of issues. And I have people fill out an operating manual when they start working with me, because it shows how you operate best, and you want to make sure that somebody's good with how you operate. You want to know how they operate best and whether you can make that match. Yeah. Because somebody who, for example, has extreme ADD is going to be challenging to live with. And can you make that work? And do you have the communication skills and the patience to be with somebody like that? I think, we don't look at things on that granular level.
Right. Yeah. Someone who's a type A personality might not be able to tolerate that. And that's something that, no matter how wonderful the person with ADHD might be and how much you might seem to have in common, that's something that is fundamentally going to create issues in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned before, you know, that the fundamental values, you know, you have this whole exercise. Are there any exercises that you can share on air that could help people start to define what's most important in a relationship?
Sure. So there are a couple of exercises in the book, but the first one is really just thinking about what you value today, like as a springboard. What's important to me right now, this very moment in my life? And then I ask people to take a look at that list and take a step back and see of these things that are important to you today, what has been important to you over the past several decades of your life, really throughout your entire life? And are these things going to still be important to you going forward in your life? Or are these sort of fleeting values? For example, the love of travel, right? Two people might love to travel, and they might travel extensively during their courtship, maybe even early in their marriage, and then they have kids and they can't travel that much. And so, you know, they're okay with that. They understand that they're not able to do that. But the travel is not necessarily a fundamental value. It's the thing that leads them to want to travel so much. Like that, the fundamental value is really adventure, because it's the underlying thing that attracts them to the travel in the first place. And so if they both have this sense of adventure, then, you know, it might not be about just travel anymore. It might be other ways in which they seek adventure, but then adventure is really the fundamental value. So distilling that from whatever your current interests are and really analyzing in a very honest way, whether these things are going to be sustainable throughout your life. Now, someone who sells off all of his or her worldly possessions and just wants to take on a backpack, and this is genuinely what he or she wants for the rest of life. This is it. They never want children. They just want to travel the world. Maybe they want to make documentaries, whatever it is. That's not the same thing as someone who has a thirst for adventure, right? That's not, they don't fundamentally value the same things there, even though it might manifest itself as travel for both of them. So really kind of understanding what the underlying reasons that something that you value something, and whether that value is even sustainable. And if it's not sustainable, then what is the underlying reason for it?
Yeah, the why is the most important thing.
Yes.
And people will say, oh, we both like to travel. Well, you like to do cruises and I like to do backpacking. So we actually have a different why, you know, one is a sense of adventure. Another one maybe is a sense of comfort.
Right.
And luxury and relaxation, and you're not doing the same thing at all.
No. And so
it's going to be hard to travel together, and that's okay if everything else is working, right?
Sure.
You can find ways to travel alone, and or you can find ways to travel and then separate and do separate things. One person goes golfing, the other one goes horseback riding. You don't have to do the exact same things, but you do have to have a lot of things that you do find in common in order for it to have that foundation. I used to talk about the three pigs and the houses that they built, and that you want to have the foundation of the brick house that the third little pig built.
Yeah.
You can't
build, we
usually build our relationships on straw. We build it on the first house, and it's not sustainable at all.
Right.
Is there anything, Sarah, that I haven't asked you? I know that there's a lot you have to share, but in this short time we have, is there something else that you would like to share with our audience?
What I want people to know is that there is someone out there for you, no matter what age, no matter what you've been through in your life, whether you're divorced, whether you've never been married, there is someone out there. And a lot of people sell themselves short because they define themselves by their issues. They define themselves by what has happened to them in the past, what they've been through. I recently spoke to someone, it was a client who consulted with me, and she had a lot of disabilities. And she goes, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find someone else because I'm disabled, and it's very difficult for a disabled person to find someone. I don't want to be alone. And I obviously could not even begin to put myself in her shoes. And I completely, have tremendous compassion for her position. And I don't undermine it in any way. But what I said to her was, you're defining yourself by your disabilities. You think that you are your disabilities, and you have so much to offer. You're successful, you're intelligent, you're kind. These are the things that you should define yourself by. And you should have confidence that someone is going to be attracted to you based on these things, not attracted to you because of your disability, right? And so our own limiting thoughts are sometimes our biggest enemy. And I just want everybody to know that there is someone out there for everyone. And it might be such a difficult journey to find that person, but it starts with an intention, and it starts with a recognition of who you are and your worth and your value. And you should not sell that short. You should not sell yourself short. That's when fear makes decisions on your behalf instead of your intellect making decisions for you. And I just want everybody to know their worth, and they're worthy of being loved and loving, and that it's possible. You just have to start in the right place.
Yeah. Well, I love that message. It kind of takes us full circle from the beginning of this episode, where I talked about how your past doesn't limit you. And here we are saying, you get to have the life and the love that you want if you change your belief system. I had a client once who had cerebral palsy, and she used to not tell people until after she was on the date. It was so obvious, though, because as soon as she walked in, she walked with a limp, and she would hide her hand under the table because it was turned in a little bit. And I said to her, you are not your disability. You are so much more. You're so bright, and you have done so much in your life, and you're so kind, and like all the things that you just said. And once she started to really embrace her value, she ended up finding her husband, and they've been married now for quite a while, her second marriage. Yeah. It's just, we have to own who we are and not see it as limitations. I'm just rewatching Sex Education. I love this show on Netflix. Have you watched it?
Yes, I have.
So good. So there's a man in the show who's in a wheelchair, and he's great. I mean, you see his arc of how he starts to see that he's worthy of being with people that he likes. He's got a great personality. He actually became paralyzed from an accident in real life. And so he started out as a person who could walk, and now he's in a wheelchair. But it didn't limit him. He's an amazing actor, and he's does really well in the show too, in getting the women that he cares
good
about.
Girls. I mean, and that's the thing. I don't want to slight how anybody may perceive themselves, because I'm certainly not in their position and I'm not in their situation. And I think that, everything that we go through, all our traumas, all of our past experiences, they're so complex and complicated, and they have such an impact on our emotions and our definition of who we are, especially if they are superficial in nature. And so it's really hard not to conflate our issues with our value or our sense of self-worth. Those two things are so inextricable sometimes. But then therein lies the challenge, right? That comes back to fixing that F word, is that before you enter into a relationship, you need to fix yourself and come into the relationship in a healthy way so that you can find a healthy relationship. And, and if you are somebody who is conflating your sense of self-worth with whatever disability or challenge or trauma you may have experienced, then there are avenues for working through that. You know, it stays with you. It's a scar, but you should wear your scar proudly. It's who you are, and you can't let it limit you. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to be loved. Why not?
Yeah. There are so many tools. I mean, this is what I do for a living every day, is to help people believe in themselves more and really interrogate the truth of their limiting beliefs. Because once we really start to ask ourselves, is this true, and can we prove it's true, it's not provable because there's always a little area where we say, well, it's not always true. And then we can also learn to represent ourselves, to present ourselves in ways that showcase our values, showcase who we are at our core, the why of why we chose the career we did, or why we have the hobbies we have. And I have a coaching group, and we meet monthly. And the last time we met, we were talking about this. We were creating little stories and reframing our stories. And one woman was talking about fostering children. And so her little story was, I foster children. And so when we got down to the granular part of it, well, I fostered 69 children. What? And so we got to, like, why did she foster 69 children? Well, her kids had grown. She wanted to give children the opportunity to have a loving family, but she did, like, not full-time fostering. She would do, like, transitional fostering and fostering for respite care to the parents who were foster parents. And she talked about how much it gave her. And that was her value system, that she benefited so much. And then I had her share a story of a particular child that meant the most to her. And now we're getting to know who she is at her core without her saying, I'm a compassionate, kind person. She can talk about this with a man that she's on a date with, and he can get a window into her heart and her soul. And she can learn about him through stories like that. So there are ways that we can look at our accomplishments in a new light, in a new way. And I think that helps us to step into our value even stronger.
And if somebody doesn't like your accomplishments or your values, mm-hmm. or you feel afraid to share those things with this particular person, then that's not the right person. Move on. That's, you yes. know, the right person will accept and understand.
Yes, we don't want to try and put ourselves in a position where we're trying to be something we're not. This is why relationships fail. So, Sarah, I'm very excited for your book getting published very soon. And if you can give us one link, maybe your website, where we can find everything else about you, that would be great.
Yes. So the best place, I guess, to find me and to order my book would be my Instagram account, which is sarah.a.intelligator.esq. It's a mouthful. I need to update my website. Eventually my book will be on my website, which is lafamilylawpractice.com. But the book is available for pre-order now on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and anywhere else that you buy books, essentially. And it comes out on November 28th.
Okay. And can you give us the name of the book one more time?
Yes. It's called Live, Laugh, Find True Love.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. This has just been a very enlightening conversation, hopefully saving a few more people from divorce and yes. getting them into healthy relationships, which is really the goal. And yes. I love that you have laugh in there too, because that's an important quality in a relationship. And so I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. And thanks everybody for listening. If you love our show, please give us a high rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, here's to your last first date.
If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.